Lutig Wachtschakwa.
I'm Clara Christensen from Larson Bay. I'm just going to translate what Julia Pestrikov was saying. She was saying just what I would have said. She said, people from outer states, from lower states, come up here, which me, myself, I never did like either. They come from all over to hunt, to fish, and they take all our food away. And they sometimes get dangerous because they shoot any place. Like Julia said a while ago, there was two people hunting at Port Lions from their village. And there was other hunters from lower states or wherever they came from, wasn't from the village, was hunting also, and they were shooting at these two people. So these two people had to lay down in order to, for them not to shoot that, you know. So they wouldn't be shoot that. And she also said that, she said almost everything that I would have said. Our fathers, our mothers lived in the land that we're living in now. And they ate everything we eat. Only the young generation, like she says, we have to teach to eat what we're eating. This young generation, the kids that's growing up now, they don't like to eat anything us elders eat. But I hope someday they will learn to eat some of this stuff. That's their own food. That's their own culture. They should learn to eat all this stuff, not say yucky every time somebody tries to tell them to eat something that we're eating. That's what my great-granddaughter tells me, yucky grandma. I tell her, that's not yucky, that's real good stuff. That's the way we grew up, we got to eat that stuff. I'm sure all the children nowadays do that at home, but they have to be taught to eat all this stuff. And now to the Aleuts, if you want me to talk. Huichalitaten, umyaringwaktahtong anunakpat, angliwilokpat manna, mirikansat magutteludeng. Pyuchtijimukhtun piludeng mani, nama mama bat niwatal khida dako gokhok shumajik kayahneit shikok kaligakhle natkun shuut shuuk chikot shung nakhat magut ushikhakhat shu li pagakhlu deng chali adako go mululu deng hok shu ningedut iklunit tuakka. Oh, that's all I got. I got lots to say, but it'll be all night if I have to talk.
Thanks very much.
My name is Fred Pestikoff. I'm from Port Lyons. Everything that I was going to say tonight has been already said, but I'd like to top it off with a few things here. Like Jack Wick said, the act was designed to fail, and that's why it couldn't get any participation from our younger people coming up. I've been asking a lot of children at home, trying to get them involved in a lot of this there, what belongs to them. And pretty much every one of them say that this thing is designed to fail. Why should I take responsibility? I don't want my signature in something that's going to fail. If they could come up with something better, a lot of children say, if they can come up with something better, I'd be more interested. Now, we've only had 20 years, and we couldn't get squared away in 20 years. It's just not enough time, because first of all, we had to train ourselves before we could train our children. And I've been working on this since day one, since Nixon signed this thing, and I still don't understand it. And how am I supposed to teach the children? It's just like trying to hand them a hot potato. And I got the pot holder in here, take it. And they say, no way. So I would say now that time is of essence, and we have to have more time. I think right now that an extension to this act for us to have more time is in order. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pestikoff. If some of the folks at the back would like to say something, we have a portable mic that Mary can take along there, so you don't have to come down all these stairs and maybe break your neck on the way down. Maybe we should see if some of the folks would like us to. This is just a microphone, not a ray gun or something that she's got there.
I was going to suggest to take
a break.
A break and get everybody working to come back. And
okay, a break has been suggested.
Well, that's probably a good idea. If that's okay, maybe we should take a 10-minute break. We'll take a 10-minute break, and then we'll start again and see if other folks want to speak.
You
Well, maybe we should start again. Well, that's okay. Well, maybe we should take our seats. Okay.
What did you say, my name?
Yeah, just give us your name and then...
My name is Moses Malutin Jr. And I'd just like to say that that I think that maybe the younger kids should get into this Native stuff. I don't know. I've had a class, that a land claim settlement class, about 2 years ago, and I learned quite a bit about it, about the settlement act that we've had, and I think that maybe if we can try, maybe we can do something with what we have and save it. Last year I was in a dance group called Tumulatstun, and Mary Hawkinson is in that group. And we were trying to get a group together to maybe like try and bring back what we had, what our ancestors had. And I think I'd like to keep that, our heritage, our culture. I don't think I have anything else to say.
Thanks very much, Moses. It's very good.
My name is Carl Gatter. I'm from Old Harbor, and I just have a few questions to ask, you know, for our class. Like, what decides how much land the natives get, and how can the natives find out where their land is located? And does it matter what tribe you're from or to tell how much land you get? Or is there a difference? And can we sell our land before 1991? Or can we build and live on our land, or use it for commercial use, or to open up stores or businesses? And on the subsistence for the natives, I just want to know if there's any kind of animals that you can hunt without a license, and how much percent native must you be to be able to hunt animals for subsistence, and are there any protected animals that native can hunt for subsistence? Well, that's all the questions I have. Thanks.
Well, thank you. Thank heavens those are all the questions you've got. Well, let me try to answer some of those questions, and they're good questions. Well, first of all, you said, how was it decided how much land the native people of Alaska should get? Well, that was something that in the end Congress decided. They decided that the native people would get about 10% of the land of Alaska, that is 44 million acres. That's about 10% of Alaska. They had a formula that applied to the villages to determine how much land the villages would get, and it really was on the basis that the more people you had in a village, the more land you got. It's a complicated formula based on the idea of core townships, and it's, I think the best thing to do with that is to say that it depended on what region you happen to be in. In Southeast Alaska, there's a lot of native people, but there isn't much land, so their villages didn't get as much land as you would have expected them to get, whereas in other regions, the Doyon region, for instance, there's a lot of land, so the formula was applied to the fullest extent, and I believe those represent the two opposite experiences. You said, well, how can you find out where your land is? Well, though the native people have been finding out where their land is for the last 13 years through the process of land selection. And certain lands are made available by the Secretary of Interior, and native people are entitled to choose from those lands. But there have been amendments in 1976 and again in 1980 that allowed native people to get in other lands. Now, you said, does it matter what tribe you're from? Well, if you regard each village as a tribe, it does matter because you're entitled to be enrolled as a shareholder in your own village and in your own region. In that sense, it does matter what tribe or village you're from because you can't claim the right to be a shareholder in more than one village. There are exceptions to that where you may acquire shares by inheritance. But then you asked a very important question, can we sell our land? Well, yes, the corporations can sell the land. There's nothing to stop them selling the land, and some have sold land. But for the most part, the 44 million acres that Native people received back in 1971 is still in Native hands. And it seems to me the important thing is to ensure that that land stays in Native hands, whether it's through continuing ownership by Native corporations or by IRA councils or by cooperatives or in some other way. I can tell you that in this May, I don't see how you're ever going to write all this down and report back to the class, but I'll send you the transcript if you. In other countries, Native people have been settling their claims since 1971, and they wanted to make sure they held on to their land. So, for instance, in Australia, where the native people have begun to settle their claims, what they did with the land, that's right, don't copy this down, this is a digression. The elders hold the land in trust for the whole tribe, for the whole village, and then all the people elect a land council that decides what's going to be done with the land. But the elders hold it in trust for everybody. And then it's the body of elders is changed, but the land is still held by the elders down through the years for all the people of the tribe. In Canada, in the Mackenzie Delta, which is on the Arctic coast of Canada, just in August this year, the Eskimos living there made their settlement with the government of Canada, and they worked out an arrangement whereby they have what is called the Inuit Trust, or the Eskimo Trust, and everybody has a certificate of trust, and the trust holds the land. And when you're born, you become a member of the trust. When you die, you cease to be a member, and the land goes down from one generation to the next. They also have a provision in their settlement that the land, if it's used for subsistence, can never be taxed. Now, right now under ANCSA, your corporation lands, if they are developed, if they're used for commercial purposes, are subject to taxation. If they're used for subsistence, they can't be taxed. But in the years after 1991, 20 years after each corporation gets its land, 20 years later, that land could be taxed. And even if it's used for subsistence, doesn't earn any revenue, isn't used for commercial purposes, nobody makes any money out of it, the state could still impose a tax on it. And in the 1990s, if Prudhoe Bay starts to run out and the state is looking around for revenue to replace its oil revenue, and they imposed even a tax of $1 an acre on all the native land in Alaska, native people would have to get $44 million a year just to pay the tax, $1 an acre. Now, that's the worst thing that could happen, but you might think about it. It seems to me that you can lose your land through three things. One is your corporations might go bankrupt. You'd lose the land that way. Your corporations might be taken over. The shares might be bought up after 1991 by outsiders. They could take over the land that way. Or in the 1990s, the state might impose property taxation on your land. You couldn't pay the tax. You'd lose it that way. Then you asked me some questions about animals, hunting animals without a license or something like that, and how whether there was a certain qualification regarding blood quantum to engage in subsistence. Well, in Alaska, you don't have to be a native person to engage in subsistence. You have a subsistence law that applies to natives and non-natives. The Eskimos in the Mackenzie Delta in Canada, when they made their settlement in August this year, they looked at Alaska's settlement and they said, we want subsistence for the natives only. And the government of Canada agreed, and they said all the white people that are engaged in subsistence now can continue until they die. But then when all of those white people who are now engaged in subsistence are dead, only the native people will have the right to engage in subsistence after that. Now that's an agreement they got, and they had to spend about 7 years negotiating to get it. But they had looked at the Alaskan experience, and they felt that they would try something a little different from what you have. Now, you have some animals, marine mammals, like the walrus. I don't think there are any around here, but I'll take that as an example, that you can, that only native people can hunt for subsistence. Those are certain animals that come under federal regulation. But under state law, all fish and game are the common property of all the people in the state, native and non-native, and that's why your state subsistence law doesn't have a preference for native people. Well, those were real good questions. I don't know whether the answers are as good as the questions, but there you are. And thanks for that, those questions, Carl. Now you've found out that why some of the older folks said earlier this was a pretty complicated law. I should tell you that because I realize, having traveled around the state, that people really, their paramount concern is they want to make sure they don't lose the land. I've been bringing some people together and to have public roundtable discussions in Anchorage about the alternatives. What can you do to make sure you don't lose it? So I've had legal experts from Alaska and the lower 48 and native people who've studied these questions come together in Anchorage to talk about these alternatives. How could you restrict the sale of shares so a corporation would never fall into non-native hands? What if you transferred your land to an IRA? Well, you don't want to jump from the frying pan into the fire, so what's the best way of making sure, if people decide they want to transfer their land to the IRAs, what's the best way of making sure that can be done in a way that really does protect the land in perpetuity? Then we've looked at non-profit corporations, we've looked at cooperatives, and we've asked experts on these subjects to come and talk about them to make sure that when I write my report, I'll be able to suggest which of all of these alternatives might be best suited for Alaska Natives. I understand there's some folks here from one of the other villages who were going to speak, and I hope you decide to do that. We could have Mary bring the microphone to you. I don't know exactly where you are, that's the trouble. Okay, there's a question here. Do you want to come up and... Oh, right.
Yeah, I'm Lena Delgado from Yuzinki. I just wanted to make a comment on the younger generation. I think us, the younger generation, should get involved with ANCSA in 1991 in our native waves, for we are going to be the future leaders of our villages. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Moses here in the front row. No, that's Carl.
Well, I was wondering why can't we make it so that the land is only sold to natives, or is that somebody else's decision?
The question is, could we make it so that the land could only be sold to native people, or is that up to somebody else? Well, right now, your native corporations can sell the land to anybody they want. The real question after 1991 is what people will do with their shares. You could ask Congress to pass a law that said you couldn't sell your shares to anybody except native people. You could also do what you've suggested. You could ask Congress to pass a law that says native land can't be sold to anybody except native people. That's what the Eskimos in the Mackenzie Delta in Canada have written into their settlement that was just came into force in August. That is, they can't sell their land to anybody except Inuit or Eskimos.
ANCSA reads that 20 years after receipt of title of the land, it becomes taxable. If the native people have not received title of their land in 1991, Does that mean that they still have another 20 years?
Yes, I think it means that the 20 years only runs after you get your land.
I have been in contact with Ted Stevens, Senator Ted Stevens, and BLM, and they stated that it would take many years for the land to be surveyed in order to give the title to the native people, if ever. So therefore, ANCSA is a lie.
Well, some of the corporations have received interim conveyance, at least, to most of their land, and some of the regions have, too. But you're quite right that when Congress first passed this law, they said that in 1991 they would have to pay taxes on their land, and it became apparent after a few years that some of them might be paying taxes on land that they still hadn't gotten. And in that sense, it was a strange state of affairs. For the record, that was Gene Carlson who spoke. Would any of those folks in that row behind you like to say anything, Mary?
My opinion has been gone through already, so save time and give someone else a chance. Thank you.
No, my name's Alberta Aga. I was just wondering, how could the natives sell land when they haven't got the deed to it in the first place?
I suppose they can't. I'm talking about land that they have now got full title to, and that and some corporations have managed to do that. Now, they can sell that land if they decide that they want to do it. I was saying earlier, however, that very few of the corporations have actually gone out and sold land. For instance, there are some. There's a village corporation near Anchorage whose land happens to be valuable. Well, they've gone out and sold some lots, made some money, and put it in the bank. They happen to be fortunate. They had some land that they could convert into cash, and if they spend the cash wisely, they should have a stream of income for many years. There is a corporation in Southeast Alaska that had some timber, a village corporation. They sold the timber. They put the money in the bank, and they paid $10,000 a year to each of their shareholders. Then they pay that out of the interest. But they were very fortunate, and those stories are the exception and not the rule. The rule for village corporations is very much as you have experienced it here in this region. Village corporations have had a really tough time.
It's coming. You got to spoke.
Well, some people spoke to me at the break and said that they had been thinking of saying something, but that their thoughts really were along the same lines as the people who had talked earlier. That is, they felt that the things they wanted to say had been said by others, and But if you want to say something, even if it's said, been said already by somebody else, please feel free to do so.
Another question, while I was here, a lot of people seem to ask, now that the corporations don't have money for legal counsel, and we know we got to amend it, and we know we're stuck with land, and the money's gone, and the only thing we can do is hang on to it, but we need legal counsel to do so. When there's no money in the kitty, who and where do we turn to get legal counsel to assist us?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I don't know the answer to that. That's one of the dilemmas that some village corporations are facing now. Some are even trying to sell land just to pay their accountants and their lawyers and so on.
Is there a chance that the village corporations can go with their tribals to the United Nations if we want to be heard to get some help?
Yes, but I think that that it's more important in the meantime, certainly, to do what you can within the United States, to go to Congress, to go to the state legislature if necessary. It seems to me the important thing now is to work out what it is you want to do and then decide where to go to try to get it done. Everybody yeah. seems to know what they want to do. They want to hang on to the land.
Maybe I was looking a little too far, but what I meant, if we can't get justice done through our legislatures, congressmen and stuff, then could we go to United? I guess I got that backwards. Yeah. I always have a habit of doing that, putting the horse in the back of the cart.
Well, you could do it. Of course, the United Nations doesn't have any jurisdiction to deal with land that is within the boundaries of a particular country, but if everything else fails, I suppose you might wind up there.
Yeah, I was thinking if this could be done, if there's an unjust, sometimes you have to go to other places to get help.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My name is Frank Carlson. This is a more informational thing that I want to pass on to, especially Carlick Village and Larson Bay. A week ago, their corporation voted by a vote of 4-3 to trade their lands for lands up at Prudhoe Bay. So anybody have any backing could work with their corporation to try to stop that some way. That also entitles, affects your 10-acre plots. So they have a very important election coming up in February. So everybody that's involved in this merger, that's still in the merger with the corporation, should really look at that when it comes time to vote for your new members on the Cognac board. So I just want you guys to know that that's pending at this time. So your lands may be in jeopardy at this time. Thank you.
That's the Cognac board that right. made that, that right. voted 4-3.
Right.
I want to know if there, if like two people say a husband and a wife, they both have shares in the corporation and have land, can they put them all together and have their land in one same space, or one bigger chunk of land?
Well, the let's deal with the shares first. I suppose a husband and a wife, if both had shares, let us say, in Koniag, could agree to leave their shares let's suppose they just had one child, to that one child. So they would unite the shares in the ownership of one child if they decided to do that. If they both owned parcels of land under the land laws of Alaska, or let us say they had each obtained a 1.5-acre home site under ANCSA, they could arrange to hold the two parcels of land in common, but I don't think that's anybody, two people can do that, whether they're husband or wife and wife or not, with any land they happen to have. But I don't think that's something that is a special problem of ANCSA. I think that you're perhaps thinking of the shares. But the answer is yes, they could do it.
Thanks.
For instance, there are two villages on the St. Lawrence Island in the Bering Sea, Savunga and Gamble, and they hold the island in common. It's two corporations that are still separate corporations, but they hold the land in common as if there were only one owner.
I have a question to make somewhat along the lines of what Sven was mentioning about the UN. It brought into my mind the validity or the power, let us say, of international law as it bears on our situation. The way this contract or pact was entered into was somewhat like a large and powerful nation designing, well, for instance, England, when they colonized the Americas and made the laws and the taxes according to their convenience at the moment, to keep the American colonizers under control and dependent upon them. The American people were at that time considered to be fully within their rights to resist that kind of control. What bearing do you see international law has to do? How does ANCSA fit into international law? How binding, how solid is it?
Well, Frank Peterson asked that question, I think, at the very beginning. Is ANCSA legal? I suppose he meant, is ANCSA constitutional? Well, I think the answer has to be yes, it is, because Congress passed ANCSA, and the courts have upheld it as an exercise of constitutional authority by Congress. The question of international law is really an important one, because the idea of Aboriginal rights in America, the idea of native sovereignty in America, is based on international law. And the judges who in the 19th century developed the idea of native sovereignty and Aboriginal title based it on the idea that the native people were independent sovereign nations before the Europeans came, and they retained what they called limited sovereignty even after England and France and all of those countries set up shop in the Americas, and even after the United States of America was established. The native tribes still had in a limited way the sovereignty that they had enjoyed before the Europeans ever landed in America. And that has been the theory for native sovereignty and Aboriginal rights, not only in the United States, but in Canada and in every other country where there are native people since that time. Now, it's one thing for native people to say today, well, we have certain rights under international law. The trouble is you have to find a court that will recognize international law and apply. Principles of international law are re-entering the, are finding their way back into the whole idea of native rights today. But that is a process that doesn't occur suddenly. It takes place over a long period of time. But international law remains the principles of international law remain the foundation for asserting native rights in the United States and many other countries today. I'm just saying that it's a process that takes quite a while, and you can't just go off to the United Nations or to the International Court of Justice in The Hague in the Netherlands and say, I want you to grant an injunction against the United States to prevent the United States interfering with our land. It's something that has to be accepted by the courts of the United States, mm-hmm. first of all. Mm-hmm. I think, however, that you're quite right to ask about international law, because it's discussed more and more at the law schools, in the legal profession, and even in the courts now when the subject of native rights comes up. In Canada in 1973, the Supreme Court of Canada upheld the Aboriginal rights of Native people, and they did it on the basis of international law, and they relied on the precedents in the United States. The great Chief Justice of the United States, John Marshall, back in the 1820s and 1830s, set out these principles of international law. And in the United States and in other countries, the rights of Native people, even to this day, depend on those principles.
Do you see that ANCSA defends and or stands for the continuity of Aboriginal rights, or as it seems to be from where I stand, is designed to dissolve them and do away with the problem so that the system no longer has to deal with it?
Well, that's exactly what Congress wanted to do. Because if you look at ANCSA, they said the Aboriginal title of the Native people of Alaska is hereby extinguished. It exists no longer. ANCSA also says the Aboriginal rights of hunting and fishing of the Native people of Alaska are hereby extinguished. They exist no longer. And Congress said, instead of these aboriginal rights, from now on you will have certain private rights of property ownership that you will exercise as shareholders, mm-hmm. just like everybody else in America, mm-hmm. or at least everybody else who has shares. Mm-hmm. And that was the idea. And they wanted to do the right thing. They thought it was a good thing. They thought it would help Native people. If it didn't turn out the way they thought or hoped it would, well, it didn't. But I think it's fair to say they thought they were doing something that would help Native people. Mm-hmm. And in some ways it has helped. I mean, some corporations are making money. Some Native people have learned how to get along in business. Some Native people are working for Native corporations. Nobody argues that it's been a complete success, but in the course of talking about the failures of ANCSA, we should remember the successes it has had. Mm-hmm. I'm not here
It seems to me that ANCSA, as you said, was set out to dissolve the problem of Aboriginal rights. It was working to the contrary of the stated purpose of Aboriginal rights claims or settlements that had ever been entered into between the United States and any tribes prior to this. Whereas it decided in this stage to do away with the tribes, dissolve them, whereas in other settlements it recognized the tribes and agreed that they do have a right to their space and their place.
Yes, that's right. But I don't think anybody argues that ANCSA dissolved the tribes. ANCSA may have dissolved Aboriginal title and Aboriginal rights to hunting and fishing, but it didn't dissolve the tribes. That's why you've still got tribal councils all over the state. Mm-hmm. ANCSA was unique in the sense that there was no settlement like it before, and there hasn't been one since. Native people in other countries settling their land claims have said, well, we'd like to have land and we'd like to have money like the native people of Alaska, but we don't want a shareholders corporation where the shares can be transferred. And they said, we want the children to be part of it so the land goes on from one generation to the next. And they said, we don't want our land to be taxed. Now, in other countries, their governments have looked at ANCSA and said, okay, we will try to avoid the features of ANCSA that native people in Alaska have found they don't want. But even Congress itself in 1980, when it settled the claims of the Indian people of the state of Maine, was quite prepared to deal with the tribal governments of those people in Maine. In other words, even Congress itself decided in 1980, when the Indians of Maine had their settlement before Congress, they decided then, well, these people don't want to follow ANCSA, so they don't have to. So that ANCSA stands by itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, those were just some of the issues that I wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Well, would anybody else like to say anything? It's 9 o'clock, and
as I listened to people talk, I had a couple more questions or recommendations or ideas that surfaced. I was very interested in your reaction to the question of the legality of the Claims Act according to Congress. and I hope you're wrong. But my recommendation, if the angst concept is to work, Frank Carlson just mentioned that there's been action taken to exchange certain lands that were once owned by Carlick and Larson Bay for lands up in the Prudhoe Bay area. If there is, you know, strong feeling pro or con toward that kind of proposal, I think one way to address that kind of issue is to structure the board of directors of the regional corporation so that each of the village corporations or villages are represented on that board of directors. Right now, the board is structured at large. Any shareholder from anywhere can be elected to the board. So therefore, the interests of the villages, whether, you know, if a director is elected, say, from Anchorage or Seattle or Portland, is not necessarily represented by those shareholders who are elected from those places, you see. If the board was structured in this way, where each village were to be represented on that board, the interests of the villages would be considered at least. That's one possible recommendation, if this thing is going to continue, that should be pursued, because we do have a distinct difference of attitudes between our village shareholders and our urban shareholders. In the villages, the way of life has been traditionally subsistence-oriented, or living off the land. In the cities, where people have to work from 8 to 5, you know, money is their basic interest in surviving in a city. So therefore, the interests that they represent on the board of directors is not necessarily that of the village shareholders. You see, there is this distinct difference I've noted in the past 13 years. They too have rights. I'm not saying that they don't, to get the benefits out of the Claims Act. And perhaps some recommendation in the proposed amendments that are being considered should address the difference in lifestyles, difference in attitudes, philosophy of the village shareholder and the urban shareholder, so that both would be given the opportunity to benefit. In closing, again, this whole discussion that's been going on about the Claims Act here, and I'm sure the other parts of Alaska and the villages, reminds me of the McDonald's advertisement, "Where's the beef?" Thank you.
Well, anybody else like to say a word before we close?
Can we do this every week? What a food would good.
Well, the food sure was good, and let me thank you all again for supper. And let me thank all of you who spoke tonight. It was helpful to me. One other? Yes.
I think we should get together and talk about this more often. At least that way we'll keep up in what's happening and what we do about it. You know, I mean, it doesn't hurt to talk about it, I guess.
Okay. Well, thank you, Moses. Well, thank you. Oh.
I would like to make an announcement, just so that you're thinking about it before you go home tonight, that tomorrow night is the Tribal Council meeting, and I sure would like to have a turnout like this. If we have to have a potluck, well, maybe we'll start organizing a potluck once a month. I don't know. tomorrow night is a tribal council meeting, and perhaps some of these things can and will be discussed there.
Okay, well, thank you all for coming. Wait.
Here comes the fish.
Would everybody please remain first for a while? First, I'd like to thank Judge Burgess and his staff here for coming and hearing us our piece of what we think the Land Claim Settlement Act has been and what it is for us and what it can be maybe in the future. Also, I want to thank the people that from the other villages that came over and spoke their piece, and it was very good. I'm sure everybody enjoyed it as well as I did, and got a little more information as far as Land Claim Settlement Act is concerned. We all seem to have the same opinion that the biggest problem we have with it is the land itself. So, without further ado, I'd like to ask June Shia Johnson to come up. She has something to present from CANA, or the people here.
Jamai, I'm glad to see an interest with our young people here. I think that's just great. For your information, I am the activity leader out of CANA, and you said you're interested in cultural enrichment and things like that. I would like to invite you, when you're in Kodiak on Saturdays, to stop by at CANA between 1 and 4. We do have Native Arts there for you, and I think this is just wonderful that Mr. Berger could make himself available for us. And he does have an assistant here who is his wife. I'm sure he gets a lot of support from her. The Kodiak Area Native Association would like to show their appreciation by giving to you a gift, which I have in this box. This is an Aleut basket.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, I'll take this.
We thank you so much.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I really enjoyed coming.
Thank you for the good food and the warm welcome. It's just so great to come to the villages and to have this. It's just wonderful.
Well, thank you, and this will be a souvenir of this very, very, very nice evening we spent here with you. So, thank you. Okay, hold it again. Okay. Mm. Yeah, isn't that nice? June?
I've heard so much about these baskets. I've seen them in museums. Can you make these?
Yeah, I forgot.
They're so small, delicate.
Yeah.
Would there be any problems in getting involved in the C program out here?
Chia Johnson.
You know, like,
oh, isn't it beautiful?
I don't know.